The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 5 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 11th of July. You're very welcome along to the programme. How are you all keeping? I hope you're keeping very well indeed. And stick with us for the next 3 hours. We have Community Garda information coming up for you after 10 o'clock. Your opportunity for the first time to hear the latest appeals and information directly from An Garda Síochána. The CEO of Donegal County Council, John McLaughlin's in a little later on, talking about the local authority's role in the new enhanced scheme. Maybe you have some questions in relation to that. And we hope to, if time will allow, bring you the opening statements from Mr. Tuberty and Kelly to the Oireachtas' committees. As I say, though, that's dependent on timing. But it looks like we can. So, in other words, rather than you having to tune out at 11 o'clock, we shall bring those to you on this programme as much as we can, all right? So that's, you're pretty well covered, aren't you? We try and do that every day here for you. Bring you everything that's going on. Right, we want you involved in all types of our conversations, raising your own issues, passing on your own information to us. WhatsApps and texts, 086 60 25000. From outside the Republic, that's 00353 86 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, 07491 25000. Again, drop the 00353. I would love, in this day and age, 2023, if you could have just one number. Even if it was a little bit longer, that you could just dial or give out, that didn't have to have all prefixes and stuff from one place to another that's 100 metres apart. But anyway, you can email us. This is a universal address, comments@highlandradio.com. Right, okay. Let's look at the front of the newspapers today. We'll start with the Donegal Democrat, and the Garda Síochána Ombudsman's Commission, GSOC, is investigating whether an offence was committed by a member of An Garda Síochána when a 21-year-old woman was killed in a collision with a patrol car in May last. Rebecca Brown from Gallia in Derry was on a night out in Buncrana when she was hit by the Garda car early on May 21st. A solicitor for the family said GSOC initially launched an investigation into whether the actions of a Garda member may amount to breaches of discipline. He said that following a review of evidence, it was deemed more appropriate to redesignate the investigation. Connor Moylan of Madden and Finucane Solicitor said the family of Ms. Brown have had concerns surrounding the tragedy from the outset and want the circumstances to be investigated rigorously. We will continue to work closely with the family to ensure a full and proper investigation is carried out. The front of the Derry Journal this morning, former Celtic and Derry City footballer Patrick McCourt has been given a 3-month suspended sentence at Derry Magistrates Court for what a judge described as a moment of madness. The 39-year-old of Wheatfield Court in Muff had been convicted in May after a 2-day contest of one count of sexual assault on January 30th last year. Passing sentence, District Judge Ted McGill said that the victim had been touched on her bottom in what he said was an instant that was brief but startling for her. Now, on to the Nationals this morning. And as you can imagine, pages 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, who do we appreciate? They're all dominated by, it seems, this RTE story. The Irish Times this morning, the future of star presenter Ryan Tuberty at RTE will be strongly influenced by two hearings at Oireachtas committees today, the station management has indicated. What would you like to hear? And what would you like to happen? Would you like to see Ryan back now? Has there been enough scrutiny? Has he been punished enough, if so to speak? I don't mean literally punished enough, but you know what I mean? As he had to endure enough to say, right, you know what? Things were bad. Things are going to change. You know, let's crack on. Or do you believe that he needs to find something else to do? Are there particular questions you would like to hear him answer? And do you just want this to go away at this point? Get involved in that part of the conversation as well, 086 60 25000. Well, new Director General Kevin Backhurst pointedly declined to endorse Mr. Tuberty's future at RTE in a series of interviews yesterday, saying instead, we'll see how the week goes and what comes out of it. Later, He said he hoped to see maximum transparency and honesty from Mr. Tubridy and his agent Noel Kelly, who will appear at the Public Accounts Committee this morning and at the Media Committee in the afternoon to face questions about top-up payments to the Star, which were concealed by RTE. Mr. Backhurst said he hoped to come to a decision soon on Mr. Tubridy's future for Ryan's sake and for everybody's, but added that the views of staff would also be taken into consideration or account, because, of course, that's where a lot of the upset as it relates to that whole case is coming from. People who were working on certain shows, radio shows, TV shows, that took significant pay cuts and were on relatively low wages. Is that trust lost? Is that trust broken? But let's get back to the reality of our lives, because, you know, it's fine for people who are very well off, but there's realities for those who aren't. The Irish Independent: a shortage of funds is stopping more than half of the population from taking out the financial products and services they would like, such as health insurance, life insurance, a pension and a savings account. Women and those on lower incomes are most impacted by the affordability issues when it comes to being able to purchase some insurance products that they would like to have. Similarly, more people in this category struggle to set up a pension or put by savings for a rainy day. And I think really what a lot of people do, they hope that really their savings is, if they're lucky enough to build or purchase a house, and that's it really, you know, that's what they might bequeath or leave to somebody else, or that's their security, which makes that whole defective concrete block crisis even worse, because, you know, all your eggs are in the one basket and that basket can end up being worthless. But anyway, this information is according to a survey commissioned by insurer Aviva Life and Pensions Ireland, and a separate survey commissioned by AIB found the cost of living challenges and the energy crisis are affecting consumers' appetite for taking greater sustainable action in their personal lives. And it is about time, is it not, that we started seeing our electricity prices come down. It's crazy that it's still the way it is, and it's off the front pages and it's off the news agenda. But the truth is that's one of the biggest problems in this country at the moment. Wholesale price of electricity has dropped significantly, and we're still playing at the top rate. And especially with this weather, the amount of solar and also wind energy that's being created, it's meeting much of our needs at the moment. And we should be that we should have a system whereby that benefits us immediately, rather than guaranteeing those energy producers the same price as coal or gas-generated electricity. I mean, those are two simple things that needed to change. A, you know, pass on the savings. It's blowing a gale, and it's quite simple that when the weather is like this, we produce an awful lot of wind-powered electricity, but there's no benefit to us from that. And also, too, why is no one talking anymore about how the fact we're still being shafted, it seems, when wholesale prices have been so low for so long now, half of what they were when the current prices are set. It's been like that for ages, and yet we still aren't seeing the benefits from it. People are heading back to the high street, according to the Irish Daily Mail, which is good for local shops, local employers. The hassle of returning goods bought online and the need to get out and about is seeing more consumers returning to in-store shopping. And I was around Letterkenny I called down to Letterkenny Shopping Centre there a couple of days ago, and was around the place another day. Packed, everywhere is packed. People walking around with shopping bags. It was like Christmas Eve. It's great to see in and out of all the different shops. So this article actually backs up what I witnessed myself, because I said to a few other people, it says the place is packed, people out shopping. Well, anyway, the Penny's Pulse of the Nation Index has revealed that more than 60% of Irish consumers prefer shopping in store as opposed to online. The report, run in partnership with Amarac Research, sampled 1,200 participants and sought to look at shopping patterns post-pandemic. The research shows 46% of people are less interested in shopping online today, citing frustration with returning items bought online, purchased products not being as advertised, and increased costs of returns. Yep, so there you go. My anecdotal observations and evidence have been backed up by research there. Okay, the big controversy affecting the media in Britain is, it's at the bottom of this paper, one second, I think that's the story that's next. Yeah, it's taken a particular peculiar turn, and I think this whole story actually is going to open up focus again on stuff that's printed in the mainstream media, but also what's posted on social media without absolutely any consideration for what's the truth, what isn't the truth. And again, I'm sorry, because I mentioned Twitter yesterday. It's not a hobby horse of mine, but it's just by coincidence. This story about the BBC presenter. I'll read the developments in the story and then make that observation. The young person at the centre of the BBC presenter scandal last night insisted the star had done nothing inappropriate or unlawful. Now, they engaged a legal firm that costs €750 pounds an hour, which is really quite remarkable. But anyway, speaking through that lawyer, via a letter written to the BBC, the unnamed person branded the claims made by their mother, who they're estranged from, as rubbish. The mother claimed her child had been paid more than €40,000 by the presenter over the past 3 years for sending sexually explicit pictures. She claimed that the money has funded her child's growing addiction to crack cocaine, and crucially, that it started 3 years ago when the youngster was just 17, making it illegal. She reportedly took her claims to a newspaper after becoming frustrated when a complaint about the presenter behaviour to the BBC on May 19th was ignored and the star remained on screen. Now, last night it was claimed the youngster, or the 20-year-old, had made it clear before the story broke at the weekend that there was no truth to it. A WhatsApp message is said to have claimed the story was wrong but was ignored by the newspaper. The lawyer for the youngster, now 20, said the BBC last night, told the BBC last night, for the avoidance of doubt, nothing inappropriate or unlawful has taken place between our client and the BBC personality, and the allegations reported in the Sun newspaper are rubbish. Okay, so this person was widely named and continues to be on social media. But what I thought really quite interesting intervention is that Elon Musk, who owns Twitter and is the most followed account, underneath that story, he linked to a Wikipedia page about the I can't remember his name now. Jimmy Savile, yeah, his controversy and the BBC. But as it turns out, there might be no controversy currently at all. Now, some would say there's no smoke without fire, but I mean, if you do not have a injured party, which the newspaper, the Sun newspaper, doesn't have now, and all of those people that named this individual on social media, if there is no injured party, well, the libel cases are going to be historically large. Wait till you see how that pans out. Right, the Sun this morning. Weight loss jabs are being investigated over reports they make users suicidal. Wegovy and Saxenda will be examined by Europe's drug regulator after three cases of the side effect emerged in Iceland. Ozempic, which is the license for controlled type 2 diabetes, but also helps weight loss, is also under scrutiny. None of its treatments have suicidal feelings or thoughts of self-harm recorded by the European Medicines Agency as one of their potential side effects. All three are manufactured by pharmaceutical company Novo Nordisk. It says there have been used for up to 15 years now, and no link to suicidal tendencies has emerged from wide-ranging clinical trials. But they are still going to be investigated to ensure that is not the case. And there's a few controversial stories have emerged about those jabs over the last couple of months for one reason or another. Now, would you like to see July the 12th a bank holiday, or public holiday, let's call it now, in the Republic? Well, a Green Party TD has called on the government to make July the 12th a national holiday. Dublin South Central Deputy Patrick Costello said the day of annual marches in Northern Ireland should also be made a bank holiday in the Republic. He added, "Today I'm calling on the Irish government to make the 12th of July a public holiday. The day is an extremely important one historically for the island and culturally for many people who live here. As part of the peace process, we have made a number of gestures, such as amending Article 2 and 3 of the Constitution," and he now wants to see the 12th, or the Monday close to it, a public holiday. I mean, listen, I wouldn't mind a public holiday every day, every Monday, 4 day weeks, that could be the future. But anyway, what do you think? Would you like to see that? Any comments on anything we've been talking about there? 086 60 25,000, or 00353 86 60 25,000. The dairy sector is bracing itself for the fallout from RTE documentary aired last night, which uncovered the mistreatment of young dairy calves at Mart's and investigated the controversial live calf export trade. Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConlogue, says he strongly condemned what he described as the shocking practices seen on the programme and said they were certainly not reflective of the care that Irish farmers provide for their animals. A Department of Agriculture investigation has commenced, and there's been a lot of reaction. We're going to get some now from Stephen Arthur, who is the Irish Farmers Association's National Dairy Chair. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Not too bad at all. And I presume you've half a day's work behind you already, Stephen, at this point. Such is the life of the farmer.
As you can see, I have my dairy parlour head on me this morning.
Oh, you're looking all right if that's the dairy parlour head. Okay. So in terms of your reaction to this programme, how shocked were you by what we saw?
Listen, I was horrified now when I seen some of the treatment of our calves, because like every farmer in the country, and our farm is no exception, we mind our calves, we look after our calves. Like, people get up in the night, they calf their calves in the middle of the night to make sure they have the proper colostrum, they mind their calves and do the job well. And they present their calves to the market in good health to sell. And it's a no-brainer here. The better the calf, the better the price. So it's in farmers' interest to mind their calves well. And you know, the stats have shown that, Greg, mortality rates are way down. The price for calves has improved this year as the quality of calves is getting better year on year. And to see that last night, we sat down and looked at my wife and my daughter, and we were horrified now to see it. And no farmer is condoning this. We have a zero tolerance to that kind of carry on with calves, like, you know.
But what needs to be done to make sure then that it is not just a zero tolerance in attitude, but a zero tolerance in ensuring this behaviour is doesn't exist, or is it to an absolute minimum? What needs to be done?
Well, the Department of Agriculture are going to conduct an investigation into the footage last night. And like, that has to be swift and decisive action has to be took here. And like regulation, we have regulations inside the farm gate on calf welfare and animal welfare management, and that has to be carried forward. And there is regulations in yards, but it needs to be regulated. Like, there needs to be department officers in the yards, in the marts. There needs to be overseeing what's going on. And that's where the game stops and starts, is with regulations being regulated, and it's not being done, obviously.
That's it, because these regulations, they're in place. There are strong regulations there. This what we witnessed was breaches of those regulations. So that means there are punishments, there are sanctions, and there should be enforcement and monitoring to make sure this isn't happening in the first instance.
Well, definitely. Like, that's the department's remit, is to regulate, and where the regulations are broken. Like, believe you me, on the farmer's side of the fence, if we break regulations, we are fined. The penalties are imposed upon us. And the same has to apply at the other side as well. If the regulations are not being carried out to the T inside market gates, there has to be action carried out here. And obviously it hasn't been.
I spoke about live exports years ago, and it has been a concern for years. On the programme last night, a truck with Irish calves on was followed. It was on a journey to Spain, and the claim in the programme was that for almost 19 hours, the animals were transported continuously with only short breaks. Is there any way around that? You know, as I say, live exports has been a controversy for quite some time now. It's something that bothers people.
Yeah, but right. And just firstly on the live exports, like, there's 100,000 calves go to Holland alone. And the Dutch companies that use the Dutch calves, they like the Irish calves. They're very efficient. They're robust. Like, they're using 30% less antibiotics on an Irish calf than there is on a European calf. And they're killing on average 15 to 18 days quicker. So they're thriving. They're healthier. They're a better robust calf, and they like them on the market. On the transport, like, I was a bit shocked to see that I thought that there would be regulations there, that the lorries would be logged, that there would be time logs on the lorries, that and then when you get to the end, that there's somebody at the end. I don't know what the regulations is in Spain. When the lorry arrived in Barcelona, I presumed that, you know, that there was a regulated, that they would show their logs, their travel logs, their stop times, start times. I presume that's what was in place. But obviously the regulations in Europe, I'm not well aware of what's going on out there, but there's something seriously missing if they're not logged and checked and double checked. It's back to the regulations again, Greg.
And I'm sure it is a coincidence, but it is timely that a program like this comes out, you know, when there is a big conversation about the future of the national herd, isn't it?
Yeah, but like you see what's going on there with the breeding program. And even this year, I think there was something like 30 or 40,000 less dairy bull calves born on farms this year, because it was the first year that sex semen really got going. And like you see, there's a couple of tools there that I think is going to work going forward in the future. First and foremost is the sex semen. Farmers are only breeding what they need to breed, because let's face it, nobody wants undervalued stock on their farm. If we can breed better stock, it's better for the farm business. And secondly, is the whole DNA testing of the, our genotyping of the herd. So we'll be breeding off our best cows. We'll put our beef calves onto the cows that are not suited for breeding replacements. I think the carcass beef value on the calves that's going to be listed in the marks, it's given farmers a direction of travel and how to pick calves that's suitable for market. I think the other thing that's coming out too in January is the ESTAS charter rights on calves, like slaughtering the calves will be finished from 1st of January onwards, that you have to have a breeding program in place that shows that you're breeding away from slaughtering the calves. And that if you don't do that, your milk won't be collected. And that's a joint action involving all industry stakeholders.
And so finally,
I think they're all positives going forward.
I'm not trying to say what went on wasn't shocking, but it was the actions of individuals. It wasn't the actions necessarily of an entire sector. That being said, those individuals did engage in this behaviour, and others witnessed it. So there has to be, you know, there has to be reporting of these cruel practices. The sector has to be seen to say this is actually equally shocking to us, if not more shocking to us, and to sort of take ownership of ensuring this is stamped out.
Yeah, there has to be a calling out of this, right? And like it's horrific to see. Like we rear our calves. I see what goes on in our own farm. We rear our calves in good faith. We take care of our calves. You bring calves to the mart and you trust in the mart management to look after the calves. And that trust has been broken here, like, you know, and it's going to take a good bit now to build that trust back up, I'd imagine. And, you know, I think there has to be serious discussions held with the department, with the farm or the mart bodies, with ICOS, these people, and put a plan in place to show. I think the staff has to be handling how they handle their stock. You know, like it's again the law to have a stick or anything in the mart beating calves. Like that should be done away with. So we shouldn't be seeing that. Well, it's back to the regulation.
Is there an age limit as to when you can use a stick, or can you never use a stick?
Listen, anybody who's rearing their cattle don't want to use sticks.
Yeah, but you can use a stick.
It does happen.
You can use a stick, can you not, if the calf's over 42 days, no?
Ah, sure, listen, if you have... Listen,
it's all about facilities. Yeah,
Just to be clear, it's right. Yeah. Listen, people use sticks over 42 days. That seems to be the law, like, you know, but... In the best practice on farms, you try to have your animals... reared right, kept in good manner, and have your facilities in your farm good enough that you don't have to hammer the daylights out of the cattle to move them anywhere.
Right, okay.
And that's the problem.
Just finally, a caller says it should be pointed out that in most cases the people abusing cattle at marts and export sites are not actually farmers. It's not fair to make it look like that it's farmers who are the guilty ones. Do you think that's a fair comment?
That's a very fair comment. Yes, it's a very fair comment that people are staff in marts. They're usually minimal wage people, I'd imagine. They've had very little or no training on how to handle livestock. Like, these are stuff that has to be looked at going forward in the future. I think, like, you work in any job, Greg, you have to do a course on how to sit in a chair, how to lift a box, how to do anything before you start. Like, I think there has to be courses, maybe. Like, these are things that could be brought forward by the Department of Agriculture when their investigation is done, recommendations.
All right, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. It's already been a busy morning for you. We appreciate you joining us.
Anytime, Greg.
Right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Stephen Arthur, who is the Irish Farmers Association National Dairy Chair. Did you watch that programme last night? What's your reaction to it? A caller says, why is the department not keeping tighter checks on these marts and vehicles travelling? Indeed, the rules are there. They just need to be enforced more rigorously. Another caller says, ridiculous, disgusting behaviour on poor animals. I had to turn it off. It was so cruel. Indeed, some people would have made that choice all right. Okay, the last time we were speaking to our next guest, there were concerns over the funding of the Donegal Community Stadium. This is the new stadium at Finn Harps, of course. And there's been a development in that regard. And we welcome back onto the programme Paul McLoone. Paul, thanks so much for joining us. Good morning to you.
Hello, how are you doing this morning, Greg?
Good, and it's good to have you with us. Okay, so remind listeners, or in fact those who may not have been listening, when we spoke to you last, you'd gone public to express your frustration, and in fairness now, you did give civil servants at the higher levels, of course, quite a bit of a touch. So where were we at, and what prompted you to speak out publicly like you did?
Yeah. Well, the Donegal Community Stadium is an applicant under a scheme called the Large Scale Sport Infrastructure Fund, which was launched in 2018. Monies were allocated to 2020 to 33 projects nationally. And there's a real big problem with the scheme. Less than half the applicants have even got started yet. So the scheme just isn't working, and there's a number of reasons for that. Is that the percentage grant rate is wrong, the administration of it is too strict, inflation has kicked in. So nationally, there's a huge problem with it. But we were allocated 4 million under the scheme, and critically, on the 8th of June, a letter was issued to our applicant on our behalf as the FAA, and they were told that no other monies could be allocated to the Donegal Community Stadium project. And I was actually outraged with that letter, Greg, and that's why I went public at that time. I thought it was unfair and it was ridiculous because of the difficulties that we became aware of between the Department of Sport and the Department of Finance, that this scheme nationally wasn't working. So we were outraged that this letter was issued against the Donegal Community Stadium. We went on your show. The Sunday Independent also carried the story, but I'm delighted to say that on the 4th of July, 26 days after the first letter, there's been a major U-turn by the department and they're allowing us to apply for additional funding.
Now, that's still a process to have been gone through and we can't predetermine that, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. What is the significance of that, do you hope, if things work out as we would hope they might, Paul?
Well, the significance of that, Greg, is that in Cork 2 months ago, there's a 12 million euro project for a centre of excellence for soccer. And the champion for that and the applicant was the FAA. The project has collapsed, so it is not going forward anymore. So I was in great fear that our project would have a similar experience and would collapse. But this means we can top up what I'd call stage one. So I think we'd need about 6.5 million to get the first part done and about another 2 million to complete it. So it allows us to go in to complete stage one with the additional million, which we're going to apply for, and a further 2 million would complete the project. But critically for Donegal, Greg, we've had an extension to the planning permission twice and we're running out of time. So if this project doesn't start soon, it'll end up like Glanmire, and this stadium will never be built, and it'll be an eyesore in Stranorlar for the rest of our days. And indeed, you said to me on the last show, what is the politicians doing about this? And that was a good prompt you gave me, Greg, because last week I contacted Patrick McGowan, who's the right-hand man, of course, Councillor McGowan, who's the right-hand man of Charlie McConnellogue. I've asked for a meeting with the minister to get the monies allocated urgently to Donegal. And I've written to Martin Harley, who's also, that's his municipal district, and he's the mayor of Donegal. But because it's such an issue, Greg, between the departments and government, it really needs political will and a political push. So I'm calling on our own TDs and councillors to help us make this happen. Mm. We have all the administration done, Greg.
And this is, make no mistakes, a county-wide project. And Finn Harps is a county-wide club too and does amazing work with young people and enhancing the offering all of the while. So Can we timeline this a little bit then? So in terms of the 3.991 million, can that be drawn down? Can that get the diggers on site, so to speak? Or does it require a positive announcement in relation to the 1 million top-up? And, you know, what's holding progress up now? And when is sort of the cliff edge in terms of planning?
Well, the cliff edge for planning is September next year. But really, you can't go to the wire with planning. You know, you need to have the stadium three quarters built by September of next year. So the closing date for this top-up is the 4th of August. And that's why I've asked the politicians to say, you know, by the end of August, we need a decision. We need to get diggers on site at the latter end of this year. We do need the top-up, but we have also a million achieved through the FAI and Donegal County Council, who are very generous to us. So, and we've borrowed 500,000. So we have 5.5 million in the pot. So the additional million would, and it's a modular stadium, which we got to change that because we made a saving of 2 million at the request of the department about a year and a half ago. So if they give us the green light in early September, as I said to you, the administration, the tendering, that's all complete. We're ready to go. But all I'm asking for is, as you said yourself, if the political will is there to support this, it'll happen. And as you rightly said as well, Greg, it's a community stadium for all of the county. It's for girls football, boys football. It's for schoolboys, schoolgirls, inter-colleges, inter-firms. It's not for one club. It's for all of the county. And the county deserves a stadium that we can be proud of.
Yeah, and finally, we're so close. And the momentum is such that if it were to fall at the final hurdle, you'd wonder if it could ever be brought to this point again. It's so critical, isn't it, that when everything is so close that it gets finally over the line, Paul?
Well, the warning is Glanmire, the one I tell you in Cork, and that was with Cork County Council, and that was a 12 million project. If this, we're going to lose 5 million, we're going to have a derelict site. This is a critical issue, and it's important for the county. And I'm doing this more as a passionate sports person for Donegal rather than anything else. So it needs to happen. And if everyone rows in together, it will happen, Greg.
All right, Paul, thank you so much for the update. Have a lovely day.
Thank you.
All right, take care of yourself. Thank you very much indeed. Paul McLoone there. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. Professor Kevin Corran, a regular guest on this programme. He's a professor of cybersecurity at Ulster University, but I don't think that title gives you your full, you know, your full range of skills, capabilities and knowledge, Professor Kevin. How are you getting on? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Are you like I and many listening? Some, for others, it's straight over the head and a bore fest. But for others, it's like really quite fascinating. How closely are you tracking the emergence of Mark Zuckerberg's Threads and what kind of impact it's having on Elon Musk's Twitter, but more generally speaking, the social media landscape?
Yeah, I mean, it's astonishing. It's the fastest growing app to ever, you know, hit 100 million. And a lot of apps have never hit 100 million, and it's only been 5 days. And of course, then Twitter was in trouble anyway because Elon Musk paid $44 billion for it. But earlier, before Threads was even released, it was revalued at $15 billion. So that's a huge dip of $30 billion he's lost, really.
And I think, you know, he can take the hand out of Blue Sky or Mastodon and what have you. But this is a different kettle of fish altogether because it's, obviously it's Mark Zuckerberg's backing it. He's laid out quite clearly the kind of space that it wants it to be. He's pitching it as a completely different experience to Twitter. And I think Elon Musk is rattled, and quite rightly so.
He is, yeah. I mean, it really is a copycat. I mean, it's missing a few features like direct messages, and people are still complaining about that you can't see your users, you know, the people you follow in chronological order, but Meta have come back and said that they're going to readdress it. So the clever thing, of course, that Meta did was linking this with Instagram. So it made the bootstrapping, in other words, signing up to the service, so easy, really. You can do it within a minute and it copies across your profile from Instagram and your photos. And then you have your followers who you already have on Instagram. So it overcame the biggest problem for new social networks, is the bootstrapping problem, really, because we know that the most useless thing ever invented was the telephone, until someone else got a telephone. And then there's a network effect. The more people that got it, the more useful the network becomes again. So in the past, where social media, other social networks have appeared, well, you know, me and other techs would go there and sign up and send invitations. And of course, you have to wait for your friends. And then by the time you go back, everyone's forgotten about it. But this really made it easy. And of course, now there, he's complaining again. He's complaining about a lot, Elon, but he's complaining that engineers from Twitter, even though we fired half his company, have been working on this, really. But it really is just like someone took the source code for Twitter and just put a white background and, you know, put it online.
Yeah, but he also tweeted at that time when he got rid of all the staff, something really quite derogatory, suggesting who would take them on or where would they go and work. And lo and behold, Meta found a place a place for them. Some people are saying, though, what's the big deal? You know, you've got 2 billion active users on Instagram and you've got 100 million of them to click a button out of curiosity, that it's sort of like artificially successful and it's not really necessarily an indication of how long it might hang around.
Exactly. You know, because I go to it a few times a day to see, you know, do I find it as useful as Twitter? And not yet, of course. You know, people are generally posting hello or stuff I'm not so much interested in. But of course, I build up the accounts that I follow, you know, usually, you know, news outlets and whatever else on Twitter. And I haven't put the effort into doing that as much on Threads so far. But at the moment, I'm not finding it as useful as Twitter. So again, it remains to be seen, you know, whether or not it will be a success or whether it's just something that people are hopping to at the moment, because, you know, to see it as a new water cooler of the internet again. But it does have a chance, that's for sure, because a lot of people are cheese off with Twitter, because generally now your post, the number of posts, you're limited to 600 a day. And of course, someone who's blue verified, and they're pushing the verification badge very much on Twitter, where you sign up for £8 a month here in the UK. So again, but that's cheese a lot of people off. And there have been outages. So what could happen if you had an outage maybe for a day or two or whatever, you know, severe one on Twitter? You know, people could be flocking there because it is easier for content generators or, you know, people who post content really to just simply post to both platforms. And that's what I do in my interviews now, you know, like all the other platforms, I just simply posted there. So if there was a major outage in Twitter or something else happens really where he cheeses off a lot more people, people could start moving there really, because it has the functionality, you know, it has 95% of the functionality of Twitter. And maybe some people like the fact it doesn't have as many stats there. It's not as busy, the interface as well. So that could work in their favor.
What do the public want, Kevin? And how do we figure that out? But anyway, I want your opinion on it. Because, I mean, Twitter, what Twitter used to be, it used to be a place whereby you would go on, you followed who you followed, and primarily, you know, it was news, there was nothing else there. There's other bits of noise, but it wasn't very noisy. Now what you have, and I suppose there's the For You and there's the following, but anyway, I think a lot of people sit in the For You. A lot of stuff is pushed towards you, and it's a lot of toxic stuff. Now, that's only toxic if you find it toxic. Other people might love it, right? But, you know, there's he's actively, I mean, he tweeted there within the last couple of minutes, here you can be who you want to be. You know, you might get insulted here, but at least it's real. You know, as I said yesterday, and he might live to regret it to some extent, the BBC presenter story, he having a go at the BBC, put the Jimmy Savile article in underneath it. Now, as it turns out, that story might become really quite problematic for an awful lot of people. And then you go over to Threads and, you know, there's the inspirational quotes there and there's some other content there. A lot more famous people are there, but it's a very sort of sanitized, censored space. But then you've got the chaos of Twitter. What it's really going to settle on what the public wants. I don't know if people want to be exposed to how angry and insulting Twitter can be all of the time. And I think they might see, as sanitized and censored as it is, Threads as a just a better place just to chill out on your phone.
It's possible. Again, it comes down to the moderation implied, because Threads could easily become, you know, full of extreme left-wing, right-wing views, really. So it depends on moderation. And that's one of the things that Twitter, you know, got rid of a lot of the moderation team, really. So there are people annoyed about what's being viewed there. And of course, the advertisers pulled out of Twitter because they didn't want their content to be seen along a right-wing post as well. But Threads could easily become, you know, cesspool as well. And it depends. Yeah, Twitter is just different than the other ones again. But in some ways, they're saying that a lot of content or people on Instagram are saying that they're seeing a dip in their traffic on Instagram yeah. because there's only so many hours in a day. So another social media app comes along, it's going to detract from the other social media apps as well. So in some ways, again, I know at the moment you can't really advertise on Threads again, but of course they're saying that they'll bring that in the future, maybe when it reaches 1 billion. But at the moment, it's not easy for them to monetize any content on there. Whereas on Twitter, you can actually, that they've introduced ways for content generators to, you know, to advertise and make money from their posts.
I think it this will all come down to, you see, there's this presumption that people don't like censorship or rules. But, you know, if you've got two bars, one beside each other on the high street, you can go into one and there's no censorship and everyone's doing whatever the hell they like. You can go in there and join them, or you could go to a bar next door whereby, you know, it's the management's there's security on the door. You know, the management don't serve people who've had too much and all, you know, like. I don't think people really are quite against censorship as Elon Musk might think, really, if you know what I mean. I think people, I know when things are being censored or when people are trying to control how I'm thinking, but sometimes I don't mind because it's a more pleasant space to be.
Yeah, and there's something there. One thing that Twitter gives me, which the others don't, and I guess Threads will offer the same, is I like seeing opposing views. Like diametrically opposed views. There's people I follow on their Twitter accounts where believe that, you know, of course, that, that Bill Gates was injecting with the vaccine. It was a complete conspiracy by the government to control the world. And then there's other people, you know, I follow who, you know, are still wearing the masks and still believe as a huge threat and believe in, the, you know, that you should have a vaccine every morning. So I like seeing these polarizing views on many topics again, and also in the war, because somewhere in between is the truth. Again, so I do like seeing extreme content as well that some people might want to see censored again, but there is stuff that none of us want to see, really. But it is hard because what you have is, you know, these platforms are, you know, even at the moment, Threads is 100 countries, really. Of course, the EU don't have it at the moment. But again, so you have to have content moderators again in each country. And again, you know, even if you took Ireland again in the north, then you'd have to have from both communities as well. And how would the Twitter management or Threads upper management know all these things? And again, how far back history goes, you know, imagine trying to moderate the content in Israel, you know.
Yeah.
Again, so it is difficult on a global scale, really, to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think it's not necessarily what you say, but it's more a case of you calling me a name when you respond to me in your views rather than the views itself. It's the tone of the debate and the conversation, and people sort of wanting the right to wrongly name a BBC presenter who may have done something or other. Do you know what I mean? And to want to defend that right to the death to wrongly suggest something or... You know, one of the big conversations on Twitter was people wanted to be able to show that knifing incident in France, and they said Elon Musk shouldn't be censoring that. You know what I mean? I don't want to see that. I don't want to see young kids being chased by a person with a knife. But the defenders of free speech wanted that to be shown, and I still don't think we've all really figured out what we do and don't want to see.
Yeah, it is difficult. You know, just like I said, it's multi-jurisdiction, you know, on the internet, and it'll remain so for a long, long time, really.
All right, listen, lovely to have you on the show as always, Kevin. Thank you very much indeed for your time. Have a lovely day. That is Professor Kevin Corran, Professor of Cybersecurity at Ulster University. The Ryan Tobberdy and his agent have released a statement today. Mr. Tobberdy says we will be presenting key documents and new information to the two committees, which we believe will bring maximum transparency to the situation and address much of the misinformation which has circulated over the past 3 weeks. This is the first opportunity we have had to set out the full facts of what occurred, and we've spent weeks reviewing all the information about these issues. Mr. Tobberdy will use his opening statement to set the record straight and call out some untruths. He'll describe the controversy as my darkest hour, both professionally and personally, and so on and so forth. So they're going to come out, they're definitely going to come out fighting, and it's like that song from Shaggy, I think it's going to be. It wasn't me. So we'll see. We'll bring you the opening statements just after 11 o'clock if they run to schedule. And you'll be able to watch them too on our social media, on the live stream, by the way. So tune in or stay tuned after 11 for that. Morning, Greg. In relation to Ryan Tubridy, in my opinion, his biggest mistake was leaving the Late Late Show when he did at the beginning of the year. He said he had no plans to leave the show he loved doing. If he was still a Late Late Show and came out straight away and answered questions, this would be over. No matter what happened, if you stand your ground, people respect you more. All that being said, I think it will make a big change at RTE, which is long overdue. Really balanced comment there, and I think much of what you say there is right. Greg, in response to yesterday's dilemma, re-perceived overcharging for fuel at certain filling stations, and I understand the reason. When you insert your debit card, insert your PIN, you're only authorising the card. The fuel company don't know how much money is in the account. The fuel companies have been defrauded by motorists authorising a card and filling up with little or no money in the account. To circumvent what happened, your card must have a balance of €125. That amount is deducted from your account and placed in what banks refer to as a shallow posting. This means that neither the bank, the retailer, or you have access to the cash until the transaction is cleared, in which case the balance is automatically refunded. Hotels also use this shallow posting for booking room services. This is to ensure that a customer doesn't walk out without paying. The downside is that if you only had a few hundred euro in your account while away for a few days, you could find yourself financially embarrassed. Indeed, and the thing is, you see, and what's problematic about it is that if you're going in to put 20 euro of petrol diesel in your car, do you really want, even if you have a grand in it, do you really want €125 of your money sort of unavailable to you? You're only buying 20 or 30 euro of petrol or diesel. Now, this is only in some garages, and I would imagine they're going to change their policy in the not too distant future. But it's not up to us to take the hits, you know, the general population to take the hit for people driving off or falsely registering cards. You know, that's up for them, I think, to come up with a different solution. Because as I say, particularly in a cost of living crisis, if you're going in to get a 10 or 20 euro of petrol or diesel because you can't afford to fill the tank, and then you're going to a shop and 125 euro has been frozen out of your account, albeit it will be returned, less the petrol and diesel, I don't think that really works in this day and age, to be honest with you. And I think it's something they're certainly going to have to look at. And, you know, that business model inconvenience the customer way more than it does the company. And I think there'll be a bit of a pushback on that. Lots of people texting in yesterday, and there's no point reading them because they were all the same. We did read them, but reading them out, lots of people saying that they weren't aware of this. They checked their bank and lo and behold, they were down that money. All right, OK. I want to say a good morning before we take a break for the news. I want to say good morning to John, Olive, Annie, Bernie, Paul and Audrey, amongst the many of you who are watching our stream across our social media channels and on our website. Just to remind you, you can watch this programme every day in its entirety and most of our guests on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, which you can watch on your smart TV, which will have the YouTube app, or your Fire Stick, or your tablet, or wherever you want to do, across our Facebook pages as well, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. And as I say, on our website, click Watch Live on highlandradio.com. You'll be able to see Community Guard information that's coming up after 10. We'll also stream the opening statements for you. You'll be able to listen to them on the radio and watch the proceedings by clicking on our live stream as well. So that's all to come on this programme, just trying to find as many ways as possible for you able to be able to fully engage in everything that's happening across the region and indeed across the country. All right, okay. Let us take a break for the news and obituary notices. Stay right where you are, as I mentioned, because coming up thereafter, it's Community Garda information.